church and to see all the traditions there in Europe and the churches that are hundreds of years old, you know, going to Rome and seeing the relics of the saints and the bones of St. Peter. And it just opened my eyes and was a real catalyst for me, really growing in my faith. And so once I was in seminary and getting close to ordination, I thought, I'd love for as many students as possible to have this experience of the Universal Church, coming to Rome and seeing the roots of Western culture. So this idea kind of formed of this Catholic Worldview Fellowship, where we could take a group of Catholic college students from the States, give them this experience, and help them really form them to see the world through the lens of Christ in the church. So,
No, it really highlights the fact that there is such a thing as a Catholic worldview. I mean, we see the world differently, and we see it, of course, through the lens of Jesus Christ. But how would you kind of summarize that of what is the Catholic worldview, and how is it different from perhaps a secular worldview?
Yeah. So really seeing the world through the lens of Christ and his church, and seeing all the issues that we see today as Christ would see it and as the church sees it. And there's a lot of different issues at play today, you know, through Catholic social teaching or whether it be politics, the human person, anthropology, what is culture, and then also what does it mean to evangelize? What does it mean to bring the good news of Jesus Christ into our culture today? So, you know, we kind of tackle those issues together, you know, and also in the midst of real community where we can have real personal relationships.
Yes. Again, the website, CatholicWorldview.com. We're talking about the Catholic Worldview Fellowship, and they are going to be taking a trip to Germany and Italy next summer, June 26th through July 23rd, a few weeks in Europe with the fellowship. And, of course, anybody that's interested in participating in this can go ahead and inquire into it. Let me bring Rich Kelly into the conversation. Again, he's here in studio with me. He is a supporter of the fellowship, and Rich, how did you first meet Father Ryan, and how did this, you know, this relationship start with the fellowship?
Well, I first met Father Ryan when he was chaplain for Legatus. I am a member of Legatus here in Dallas, and we had a natural affinity. He's from New Orleans, and I love New Orleans. I keep a second home down there, so we had something to start with. When he broached the idea of the fellowship with me, it appealed to me greatly. One of my primary drivers in my philanthropy are things that keep young people sticky to the faith. Mm-hmm. So I support Focus. I support Young Catholic Professionals, the SMU Catholic Campus Ministry, etc. Those are very near and dear to my heart. So when he brought up the idea of the fellowship, it fit naturally with what I was trying to do. So I've been a financial supporter since probably 2018, 2019, something like that. And Father has seen fit to invite me to join the fellows every year, except for the COVID years. We were shut down, where I joined them for 3 or 4 days in Germany, sit in class with them, have meals with them, and, you know, just talk to them a bit about my life, go on the local pilgrimages that they go on, to Kevlar, Zonten, and other places. And I give them a testimony of how I screwed up my life and God brought me back to the church. And that's my contribution. And I feel very enriched by being able to, first of all, deal with young people who are intelligent and motivated in their faith. And secondly, it's a very wonderful thing for me to be able to do.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I know you've set up an endowment, and people listening right now can support it financially like you have done. I'll come back to that in just a moment. Father Ryan Richardson, again, founder, executive director of the Catholic Worldview Fellowship, joining us on the phone from Atchison, Kansas. CatholicWorldview.com is the website. And Father, if you could, we've kind of talked about the overview of what the fellowship is and what a Catholic worldview is. And let's kind of get into the nuts and bolts. The folks that travel with you, these fellows, these young people, next summer, June 26th to July 23rd. Where do you go, and what exactly is done during those few weeks?
Sure. Well, first, you know, we stay in a castle. We stay in a castle in Germany with a moat, an actual moat. it's in northwest Germany on the border of Germany and the Netherlands. Just a pretty ideal location, as I think many Americans, we kind of have an attraction to castles. And we actually stay in one for 3 weeks, which is really idyllic. And then we go down 1 week to Rome and have our adventure in the Eternal City. And really the nucleus of our formation, Dave, is four pillars of formation. So first is the academic. So students do receive 3 credits from Benedictine College. So it is a summer study abroad. And a lot of students who maybe they can't spend a whole semester abroad, but they can spend 1 month in the summer, it's a good option for them. So we do have these academic courses on a Catholic worldview. So we have professors come and speak on a variety of topics from culture, the world, evangelization, and what does our Catholic faith say about that. The second pillar is leadership. So we have a professional leadership coach. Her name is Katie Lundstrom. She consults high-level CEOs in the Northeast, great Catholic woman. She's there with us, provides leadership seminars and also some one-on-one coaching for the students. And then the spiritual aspect, we have daily guided mental prayer, we have daily mass, and we conclude the day with the holy hour at the end of the day. Students also have the opportunity for confession, spiritual direction, etc. throughout the month. And then the fourth pillar is cultural. So twice a week we go on little excursions or little pilgrimages to places first around Germany. For example, we go to Cologne and we venerate the tomb of the three wise men and see the great Gothic cathedral there in Cologne. We go to Aachen, where Charlemagne was crowned in the year 800, and explore that city. We go down to Trier, which is one of the oldest cities in Germany. We have mass at the tomb of Saint Matthias the Apostle and venerate the relic of the Lord's tunic in Trier. And then going down to Rome, we see all the major basilicas there, the Vatican Museums, the Sistine Chapel. This last summer, we also had the grace to see Pope Leo there at his summer home in Castel Gandolfo and have a little encounter with him. So all this in an environment of authentic Christ-centered community. So I would say that is kind of the nucleus of what we do.
Very nice. Thanks for that explanation. The Catholic Worldview Fellowship, they're going next summer, June 26th through July 23rd. I have on the phone with me Father Ryan Richardson. He is the founder and also the executive director, CatholicWorldview.com. In studio with me, Rich Kelly, who is a financial supporter and also has set up an endowment, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And Father Ryan, you mentioned the 3 credits from Benedictine College, and I know that probably a lot of the fellows who go on this are from Benedictine College, but that's not exclusive to that particular college. Can you say who's eligible and who generally goes with you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, so we have a core group from Benedictine, but it's definitely not the majority of the students. So the fellowship is open to any student who is enrolled in college. So, currently freshmen through graduating seniors are eligible to apply. So that would be, they're entering in their sophomore year through graduating. And they can come from any school. We have students that come from public universities and also private universities, Catholic, non-Catholic. So any currently enrolled student can apply.
Okay, thank you. And Rich, let's go back to the endowment. I know that something like this costs some money, and I think, it's, I don't know if the students the fellows are raising their own money or what, but you've set up this endowment fund, I believe through the Catholic Foundation. Tell us about that, and if people are listening right now and they're as excited as you are about supporting young people and keeping them in the faith, how can they help?
Well, the fellowship does charge tuition for the fellows that come on the summer abroad program. And for the most part, the fellows do raise that money themselves. However, it's structured to operate at a deficit. The tuition does not cover the total cost. So, I've been contributing to cover that over the years and decided that at some point we needed to have an endowment that would contribute to the unfunded overhead of the program. So I started an endowment just this past year at the Catholic Foundation, and it's simply the Catholic Worldview Fellowship is the name of it, and it's will accept donations from anyone. I intend to continue funding it myself, but it's open for donations to anybody. And the goal is to get it to a couple million dollars eventually, which would then defray the overhead of the unfunded overhead of the program.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Again, you can find out more information about that, CatholicWorldview.com. I'm sure you can also just contact the Catholic Foundation and say, I heard Rich Kelly and Father Ryan on the radio, and I'd like to be involved in this. CatholicFoundation.com is their website. Father Ryan, there's a line in the on the website, CatholicWorldview.com, that caught my attention. It says, year after year, it is our hope that graduates of the Catholic Worldview Fellowship will go back to their cities, parishes, and campuses empowered by this transformative experience of looking at history, the world, and their own life in light of the Catholic Worldview. What, now that you've done this for a number of years, what kind of, I guess, fruits have you seen from those who participate and they go back? And what kind of changed people are they once they've been, had this experience?
Yeah, great question. You know, as a chaplain at Benedictine College, I see the fellowship actually as a service to other Newman centers, other campus ministries throughout the country, because we give students a summer formation experience where they can go back to their campuses in the fall, really more on fire for the faith. What I've seen in past years is that we work with students throughout the year, and usually in the summer, it can be a time of rest and rejuvenation, but many times students come back not as on fire in their faith, for different reasons. They kind of take a little hiatus and do other summer things. So I think it's important to give our young people experiences in the summer that where they can actually grow in their faith. So what I've seen here, students from Benedictine College who have gone on the fellowship, they come back and they're some of our best leaders in our campus ministry program. We have students who have went that are now leading mission trips, that are leading Bible studies in their sports teams. And I can look at some of the other universities where we've sent students, and it's a joy to see them really on the front lines and being the right-hand men and women for their chaplains on their campuses. And so that's what we kind of want, is we want to give students a toolbox so that they can be a better leader on their campuses.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, as Americans, our country is so young, and when you go to Europe and you see the history and the great legacy of saints, you know, just like in Germany and Italy, not to mention some of the other countries over there, it really opens up our eyes. I think as Americans, we need to see this, because the church is so much older than our American experience. So do you see that as well, just an eye-opening experience of going to Europe?
Absolutely. You know, that's the thing here in the States, right? You have an old church, you know, that's 100 years old. You're like, oh man, this is amazing. You know, or 200 years old. You go to Europe and you're talking about thousand year old church, and also just the saints. You know, here in the States, we have very few. You know, American saints examples. You know, there just so many, and so a lot of what we do also is we study the lives of the saints. And we study how they transform the culture of their times. And then we take some of those nuggets and then can apply it to us today to really learn from the past, you know, learn from, you know, these great saints who are standing on their shoulders on what their lives can mean for us today. And it's so inspiring. And then when we're walking the same streets that they walked, it really makes their lives come alive for us today.
Yeah, without a doubt. Rich, I want to go back to something you said earlier about why of your philanthropic attention is on young people. There's another line on the website, CatholicWorldview.com, says, college is a time when students, among them tomorrow's leaders in society, ask existential questions. They look for inspiration. They seek mentors and make life decisions. And I just want to highlight, in light of what you said a moment ago and why this is so important to you, why perhaps other people listening should say, yeah, you know, I need to invest in this, because this is when people's lives are forming. This is when they're maybe meeting their future spouse. They're making life decisions about their career. And it's a very important, needless to say, an important time in life. And this is something that can really make a difference in their life.
Well, absolutely. As I say, when I speak to the fellows over in Germany, right now, sit down and discern your vocation. Okay. Actually pay attention to it, because it's your roadmap to heaven. So, unfortunately, college is a time when a lot of people fall away from the faith. And I just want to counteract that. And I think the fellowship does a good job of that by, you know, letting people know there is truth. And that's not your truth and my truth. There is truth, which is what the church teaches. And it's just so absolutely important.
Catholic Worldview Fellowship Experience will be next summer, 2026, June 26th through July 23rd. All the information is on the website, catholicworldview.com. Father Ryan Richardson is the executive director and also the founder, serving as chaplain at Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. Like I mentioned, that's where my daughter is, and so that's been a great experience for her. Father Ryan, could take us through some of the nuts and bolts. If somebody's listening, maybe it's the parent, maybe it's the potential fellow, what are the first steps? I mean, this is, you know, we're still obviously in 2025 when we're doing this interview, so this is a ways off. Should they be acting now, and what should they do right now if they're interested?
Yeah, so first I would say, you know, the fellowship is, it's not for everyone. So it is a formation program that we're looking for students who, okay, one, they're Catholic in their faith. Two, they want to grow in their faith. And they're looking for a toolbox. They're looking for ways where they can really become a Catholic reader. So if they have that kind of desire, if they're looking to go to the next level in their faith, and their next level in their leadership, then the fellowship can be a really, really good fit for them. You know, right now is the time when students are discerning what they're going to do for the summer. They're already thinking about perhaps internships and jobs and that sort of thing. So if there's an interest, I would recommend them or parent, grandparent, going to our website, catholicworldview.com, looking at the details of the program, what we offer. They can reach out to us via phone or email for more information. And our early application deadline is December 1st. Those students who apply before then get a discount. They get $500 off, and they get more priority acceptance. Our regular deadline is March 1st. So there is some time, but now is really the time to kind of discern what can be the next step. So I like to say, if there is interest, a good way to discern is by taking a next step. Explore the website, give us a call, send us an email. Before students are accepted, we actually have an interview with them. So we do schedule a Zoom interview to get to know them so that they can ask more questions about the fellowship. And then we can talk to them to discern if this is going to be a good fit for them. You know, now between the months of October, November are really prime times to really explore.
All right. Thank you for that. Again, CatholicWorldview.com is the website. The Catholic Worldview Fellowship Experience is what we're talking about. Father Ryan Richardson and Rich Kelly in studio with me here. And just kind of going back to what exactly happens during these few weeks. You mentioned, obviously, Rich is going to give some talks. You mentioned a lady by the name of Katie giving some presentations. Who else are the instructors? I'm sure you're doing some of it yourself, but who else do you have, like a set group of professors over there who are going to instruct, or who else does that part of it?
Yeah, so we have two amazing professors, Father John Bartunek and Father Michael Baggett. Father John Bartunek, Legionary of Christ. He's our lead professor, and just is fantastic. Great background in theology. Fun fact about him, he was actually on the set of the Passion of the Christ movie, you know, Mel Gibson's movie that came out some years ago. He was one of the people on the set there. And so he'll lead a lot of that instruction on worldview, culture. And then we have Father Michael Baggett, also a Legionary of Christ. He's been based in Rome, is a real expert on bioethics. And so he joins us, and they're kind of the two lead professors, along with Katie Lundstrom, who's our expert for our leadership formation. So they're the ones who are kind of really leading through the academic part, the curriculum.
And I'd also point out, Dave, that there are a couple of women members of Regnum Christi, including Tammy Grady here from the Dallas Diocese, who go with the fellowship to provide spiritual direction for the young ladies.
Okay.
So there is spiritual direction involved as well.
Okay. So
yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we have, so our chaplain corps, besides myself being on the course, we do have Father John Klein, who is an assistant chaplain at Georgia Tech. And then, the Consecrated Women of Regnum Christi, Mary Schwartz and Tammy Grady, to really provide that accompaniment for our students.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll come back in just a second for a final blessing from you, Father Ryan, if you would. And Richard, just want to have a last word from you as far as encouragement for people, again, to support this financially. You've set up the endowment at the Catholic Foundation. Maybe one last pitch for those who have now listened to the whole interview and said, okay, I think I'd like to be involved.
Well, I can tell you this works. It's worthy of my support. And if it's worthy of my support, it's worthy of your support. So I strongly encourage it. And again, it's at the Catholic Foundation, and we'd be grateful for any support we could get.
All right. Is there a link on the CatholicWorldview.com website, or should they go straight to the Catholic Foundation? Or what would be the first step if they wanted to invest?
The Catholic Foundation. I don't believe there's a link on the Worldview Fellowship website, which is a good idea, Dave. We need to do that. But yes, they should contact the Catholic Foundation, or they could even contact me if they want.
Okay. All right. Do you want to give contact information
sure.
for yourself?
Richard Kelly, R. Kelly, R-K-E-L-L-Y, at Luma, LUMAPM.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Rich. I appreciate you being here. And Father Ryan Richardson, thank you very much for your time. And if you don't mind imparting a blessing to those who are listening, and also, of course, all the potential fellows and the donors and the sponsors who are going to be involved in this, we'd be very grateful as we wrap up this interview.
Sure. Great. And Dave, thank you so much for this opportunity. May the Lord bless and keep you. May his face shine upon you. May he be gracious to you and grant you peace. And may Almighty God bless you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much, Father Ryan Richardson, also Rich Kelly. And again, the most important thing is to get to that website and learn about it, the CatholicWorldview.com, CatholicWorldview.com. And again, eventually there will be a link to donate on there. But if you want to go straight to the Catholic Foundation, it's very easy, CatholicFoundation.com. So those are really easy websites. Thank you to both of you gentlemen for being part of this interview. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you to Cecil Anderson for running the board and producing it. This has been the Guadalupe Radio Network interview of the week here in the North Texas area. God bless you and thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend.
With praise and thanksgiving to Almighty God, the Diocese of Dallas announces the transitional diaconate ordination of Mr. Jeremy Manis and Mr. Nicholas Weiss. All listeners are cordially invited to attend the ordination mass, which will take place on Saturday, December 20th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the National Shrine Cathedral of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Dallas. Support Jeremy and Nicholas during this time of great joy as they journey toward the priesthood. Visit DallasCatholic.org for more information.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the interview of the week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network, 9:10 a.m. to the east and 11:40 a.m. to the west. Also on our GRN app and on our live stream at grnonline.com. My name is Dave Palmer. Cecil Anderson is running the board. And, you know, this program, we try to keep very focused on local Catholic information. But every now and then, I get an invitation for an interview that may not be specifically local, but it intrigues me so much that I just say yes and I break the format for it. And this interview today is one such case, because I recently received an email from Roxanne Salonen, who is a author whom I've interviewed before, and she said that she, along with two other ladies, have written a book called Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. And it's written by Roxanne Salonen, Christina Brekovich, and Karen Ann Mahoney. And I thought, you know what? I've always been intrigued by Flannery O'Connor. This will be my opportunity to talk to an expert who's written a book about her and find out some of the questions to my answers. So hopefully you may have heard of Flannery O'Connor. Maybe you've read some of her books. I certainly have not, to be honest with you. But so excited to talk to Roxanne Salonen, and I'll bring her into the conversation in just a moment, but I'll tell you a little bit more about her. She's been crafting stories as a journalist and author. She's based in Fargo, North Dakota. And she co-authored the award-winning book called What Would Monica Do?, which I actually did an interview with her about. Whether through podcast interviews or newspaper articles, Roxanne finds Flannery's love for the truth and Catholic convictions fortifying as she seeks to report the truth today. So, having said that, Roxanne Salonen, thanks for joining me. Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And Dave, I don't expect you to remember this, but I met you even before we met online or through the phone for the What Would Monica Do book that I co-authored. I was in town in your area, so here's the local connection.
Okay.
With Ramona Trevino and Laura Musica back in, 2014,
oh, wow.
somewhere around there. Yeah, and in maybe 2013. Anyway, we were getting ready to write Ramona's memoir about her leaving Planned Parenthood. And I don't know if you even remember that, but I remember meeting you and getting a tour of Guadalupe Radio. And
Gosh. So,
yeah.
Well, thanks for, obviously, I didn't remember that. Now that you mention it, I do remember that because I was so excited that we had our own little Abby Johnson here in North Texas in Ramona and that a book was being written about her. So, all right. Well, thank you for that local connection. So maybe I'm not breaking format as much as I thought.
You're not at all. I'm very endeared to Texas.
Oh.
I have a couple of aunts that live there. And good friends. So,
oh, super,
definitely.
Super. Well, you know, I'm very intrigued by this book. So tell us the origin of this, how you and Christina and Karen Ann came together and decided to write this book about Flannery O'Connor. How did it start?
Well, believe it or not, we didn't know each other before we wrote the book or before we took the trip. We were connected to the Catholic Press Association is what it was named at the time. We were freelancers that were part of an email list that had writers, Catholic writers from all over the country connecting to encourage and support one another. And this was quite a few years ago. And at some point, the name Flannery O'Connor emerged. And a lot of our fellow writers were very taken with this character. I've been sharing that I didn't know she was a woman. I thought Flannery O'Connor sounded like a guy.
Yeah, so. Me too. Yeah.
Oh, good. Someone else said that the other day, too. So I'm not alone. But I was intrigued. You know, when someone that you trust gives you a movie review, you run out to go see that movie. I trusted the people that were talking about her. I was surprised, though, when I went to the library and got checked out her book, Wise Blood. It was her breakout novel. I was a young mom. I was a Catholic that was growing in my faith and really wanting to, you know, understand my faith better. Wise Blood maybe isn't the place to start. If you're thinking you're going to get a feel-good, edifying Catholic book, it's rather jarring and confusing unless you know the author first, I would say. And so it just pulled me in deeper and wanting to know a little bit more about her. I ended up getting the habit of being, I ordered a copy of her huge volume of letters. I know we haven't even really introduced Flannery yet, but this is how I got involved. And I started finding out who she was. I learned so much about the writing life, the Catholic imagination, and also about suffering through her letters. She died of lupus at 39 in 1964. One of the reasons a lot of people haven't heard about her is she slipped away quietly and really prematurely. She ended up contracting the disease of lupus, which her father had died of when she was about to turn 16. So it was a very tragic, it was a death sentence, basically. And so she really had this confinement. She had to move back from, she was in New York at the time, kind of starting to make those literary connections. She had gone to college in Iowa. She was really starting down a path of a flourishing wordsmith and making connections with publishers. And then this disease took hold. And in her 20s, she was called back home to Milledgeville, Georgia, which is the pre-Civil War capital of Georgia, which is something we really didn't know until we went on this journey. But two of these writers from our group ended up going on a literary pilgrimage and the 50th anniversary of her death in 2014. So it's 11 years ago now that we started this journey and only recently that our book was published. It's been a lesson in perseverance, but we went to go kind of meet the ghost of Flannery O'Connor to find out what's the mystique around this woman, this Catholic writer that is really kind of, you know, not always embraced even by Catholics. And yet she's really held up high in even some of the universities. Although in recent years, she's been canceled by some of the universities. I mean, she is a controversial character. She grew up Catholic in the Bible Belt in the 50s and 60s. And need I say more, right?
Yeah. So I think I appreciate that biography and what you've told us about her. And I do think that And I admit that I've never read any of her writing, but I think there's almost this confusion because I don't know how to categorize her. And, is she somebody worthy of reading? Are we going to be edified in our faith? And so if I may ask another biographical question, you mentioned Iowa, you mentioned Millsville, Georgia. So was she born in Iowa and then moved down to the South? Was she a cradle Catholic? Anything about her spiritual upbringing?
Yeah. She was born in Savannah, Georgia. That's where her Catholic, Irish Catholic family lived. Her mom was she came from more of a family of wealthy means. They ended up moving to Milledgeville. They did have relatives there. I can't remember exactly what prompted them to go there. I think it had something to do with her father's job. And she lived a fairly coveted life. She was the only child of this Irish Catholic couple. The church in Milledgeville, Georgia, Sacred Heart Church, was basically built by her family, brick by brick. So when you go there today, you can see a little homage at the back of the church that's paid to her. Although even some of the locals in Milledgeville, some of the local Catholics, aren't sure what to make of Flannery. Again, she's really someone you need to get to know through her letters, or we hope now through our book, Finding Flannery. We wanted this book to be a bridge for people that maybe even know her but don't know a lot about her, or people that love her already and maybe want to get to know her in a different way through three voices of three ordinary Catholic women writers who are living in the modern world and reflecting back on what can she teach us? What is it about her? I would say, Dave, in answer to your question of what she was or who she was an artist, first and foremost. Actually, she was a visual artist. She started doing little cartoons and things like that. She had a lot of time in her childhood to while away the hours as an only child, as an introvert in her bedroom, creating little characters, writing little stories. And eventually these became expanded into her fiction. That's what she's mainly known for. She has two novels that she wrote and then the rest, 30-some short stories. They're captivating. They make you squirm when you read them because she has such a handle on human nature. And not always the bright side of human nature, because there's another side, right? The side that is, predestined to want to sin. Mm. And so a lot of her stories are really about a world without grace. And how do we, what does that look like? It's really to make us want to run the other direction and run to Christ. Yeah. That was her purpose. Mm-hmm.
And I presume she never married, never had kids, right? She died so young. So she remained single, alone her life?
She did. But, there were a couple of suitors and a couple of possibilities. I do want to go back now because I remembered you asked about. So she was born in Savannah. They moved to Milledgeville. She went to college in Iowa. It was a prolific, literary community, which it still is. And then over to Yaddo in New York, she met some different significant people that were key people to her getting published. And it was Sally Fitzgerald and her husband. Anyway, she kind of was making it, she was finally finding those connections, make it in the world, becoming known with her breakout novel when she was called home. But the thing is, if without her having been called back to the dairy farm, which her mother, Regina, once born of wealth, now working a dairy farm with farm help, that was what kind of God called her into this confinement, like I said, and we were able to visit those places, her church, the farm where she grew up, where she wrote these beautiful stories, really. I mean, they are really beautiful if you understand what she's trying to get at, which is, again, why it's helpful to have some background information on Flannery before you dive in.
Yeah, I want to bring in something personal to me. I've spent the last 15 years studying and teaching St. Thomas Aquinas, who even Pope St. John Paul II said, had a really, really great understanding of the human person. My understanding is that Flannery O'Connor, referred to herself as a hillbilly Thomist, or at least that name was tagged on to her. She, I think, was a devotee of St. Thomas Aquinas. And so I'm kind of putting these two together, and from what you've said is that she does have a really good understanding of the human person, perhaps based on her own study of maybe not only Aquinas but some of the great church fathers who came before her. Would you say that she was a woman who had studied her faith a lot?
Absolutely. Not only did she study it, so in that way she was a thinker, and I would say I'm a thinker too, like thoughts are very important as a writer, but also she was a daily mass goer. She went with her mother every morning to daily mass and looked upon the cross. And so you have this person who was a thinker and was really brilliant. She really was a genius, I would say. But she also had a good heart. She had a lot of humor. So when you read her letters, I found myself laughing out loud quite often, even on the plane ride over to Kentucky, where the three of us initially met before we journeyed together in a car down to Milledgeville. We were still cracking up along the way. She was serious. She was funny. She was lighthearted. She did not take herself very seriously. You're right. She, despite having a couple of suitors, I think the disease of lupus just really made it difficult for her to flourish in that way. So she really focused on her friendships, the people she met when she was called out of her writing hole to go and speak. She didn't relish the thought initially of going to this university or that as her writing was become more well-known. What she relished was the friendships she made along the way, and she was a prolific letter writer also. That's one of the things when I'm reading her 600-page volume of letters, which, again, you can take day by day. You don't have to read them all at once. I didn't. But you get to know her. It's by the end of it, it's like you've made a friend.
Yeah.
A Catholic friend, a thoughtful Catholic friend who not only read, like you said, Thomas Aquinas, but she was concerned about the issues of the day, like contraception, or, you know, she would discuss the Eucharist. We all know the quote that Jonathan Rumi made famous at the Eucharistic revival a couple of years ago. Talking about the Eucharist, if it's a symbol, to hell with it. That was her quote.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like she was not being brash. She was being real. Because truly, if it is just a symbol, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're worshiping a piece of bread, right?
Exactly. I remember that. He had that on his shirt. And like you said, he did make it famous. The book is called Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. And I'll tell you, 10 minutes into the conversation, Roxanne, and I want this to be on my Christmas list. I mean, seriously, I'm so intrigued by this woman. But I do think she's a bit of an enigma. You talk about her beautiful stories, but also described as having grotesque violence. You use the word jarring, makes mm-hmm. you squirm, that she was canceled. So I'm trying to piece all this together, and it seems fascinatingly complex, her writing. Would that be a good way of describing it?
Absolutely. And Dave, you just touched on something. Humans are also what you just described.
Yeah.
We're messy. We are very messy. And it is a mystery because, she didn't have this life where she was out, entertaining. Like, she wasn't in the world we're in today. She wasn't confronting some of these characters. But you know what? In all ages, we have this messiness. In all ages, we have a propensity to sin. In all ages, we have confusion, and we also have beauty. And so she brought all these things together in a way that I don't think anyone else has. It's really hard to like describe her stories without just diving in at some point. But again, with caution, she is a controversial figure. One of the things that, as far as the controversy goes, she did write about, black people at the time. And at the time in the South in the 50s and 60s, they were not always, looked upon how we hope to look upon them today.
Yeah.
And when I say them, our fellow human beings. But a lot of people would take some of her quotes, and that's why she got canceled at a couple universities a couple years ago. They didn't look into what she was actually trying to do, which was she was like a reporter in that sense, describing the world as she knew it at that time.
Yeah.
However, if you read some of her stories, she actually wants to uplift the downtrodden. She actually is doing the opposite of what people have given her a chance to actually let it, let the true message flow out. But she really had a heart, actually, for the downtrodden. And you'll see that she, in essence, was really lifting up those communities that were not being held up high. And she loved, like, the farm help that lived on her property. They were great friends. She speaks of them admiringly, and yes, sometimes with a little bit of humor and jabbing. But at the same time, it's real. It's real life, and that's what she lived. That's what she described. And it's just, she's a fascinating character and really someone I think everyone should get to know.
Yeah, it reminds me of the controversy with Mark Twain, who I guess would be a similar situation where some of the language in his famous books, people have canceled him, but it was the time that he lived, you know, in that part of the country as well. My guest is Roxanne Salonen, and she, along with two other writers, Karen Ann Mahoney and Christina Brankovich, have written a fascinating book that I find very interesting, Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. And Roxanne, what, you mentioned two novels, and I think you said 30 short stories or a lot of short stories. Where, if somebody, you know, reads your book first, where do you recommend, if they're going to go into the, you know, the primary source and read some actual Flannery O'Connor, where would you suggest they start?
Again, I would start with the letters, because in the letters she talks about her stories. She talks about what it was like to get that first book published. There's another collection of her writing. There's several collections of her writings. I'm looking at them right now. One of the volumes that I read when I decided, okay, now that I got to know her through her writings, I'm going to go to her short stories and I'm going to give it a try. And I had a whole summer of just reading these. But Flannery O'Connor, The Complete Stories, has all of her little short stories in there. And they're just interesting really to read, especially once you get to know her. One of her most famous, there's a collection called A Good Man is Hard to Find. Dave, I would also suggest people go online and click and actually Google or whatever search engine you're using, A Good Man is Hard to Find. There's actually a recording of her voicing that. She was at a university somewhere and they made it available. And so you can get to hear her inflections in her southern drawl and get to know like a little bit of like what she sounded like, which is really interesting since it was so long ago. But there's, yeah, all these different collections where you can, you know, kind of just sit down and get to know Flannery and get to know her characters. There's also the movie that came out a couple years ago called Wildcat that Ethan Hawke produced, and his daughter Maya was Flannery. That again, that might be a fun introduction, but you might still have a lot of questions after watching it, as I did. My husband and I, and our son, one of our sons, watched it, and I grasped it better than they did because I'd read the actual stories. but it is a creative rendering of her work.
Would you recommend, you know, buying this for a middle schooler or a high school child, or is the content too much for that age?
I would say so. You know, I'm a children's book author too. I don't do my own illustrations, but I have a heart. My mom was an elementary teacher. My dad was an English teacher. So I have that in me. And we kind of had fun with this book. I wanted to mention this. We have a travel album in the middle of the book. It's in color of our journey. And so that's a really fun, we just got a note from someone this morning who really loved that part of it, because not only are we telling about the journey, but you can see the pictures of Flannery's home, her crutches, her peacocks. She was a huge fan, and that was one of the things she did. She nurtured her peacocks, and there was a lot of birds. So in the book, we each take a different bird as our character. And again, we did it in color. So I feel like it did kind of feel almost like a you know, young adult children's book kind of a feel. I don't think there's anything in there to detract from that. I absolutely think that high school and probably middle school as well would do just fine with it.
Yeah, wow, fascinating. The book is called Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. I do think she is a very mysterious writer, and obviously I can sense the excitement that you have about her, Roxanne, as well. We only have a couple of minutes remaining. I definitely want to let people know, where can they go to purchase this? What's the best place? Obviously, you can go to Amazon, but is there a more direct place? What would you recommend?
Yeah. So a small Catholic publisher called En Route Books and Media was the one that finally decided to take on three different authors, which isn't an easy task, but we were grateful for that. And so you can go to En Route. Actually, if you just type in your search engine, Finding Flannery, En Route Books and Media should pop up, and there's options there, and there's also some testimonials a little bit about ourselves and some different interviews and things like that that we're collecting on that page. So that would be a great place to go. And also, hopefully, eventually, or if not sooner, your favorite Catholic bookstore will be having these as well, or you can request them there.
Yeah,
we're really excited to get the word out and just to let more people know about her and not be afraid of Flannery, because I know some people have kind of dipped in and went, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So hopefully this book can be a little bit of an introduction that will be a softer easing into Flannery, and I think you won't regret it.
You mentioned Wise Blood, if I got that name right, and then you also mentioned The Habit of Being. Are those her two novels?
Yes. Habit of Being is her collection of letters. And again, it's huge, but don't be daunted by it. It took me a long time to get through, but I absolutely just loved it. As a Catholic journalist as I am in this world, truth is not always well received. And Flannery knew that, and she pushed through that in a way that really inspired me to keep going. So I really owe a lot to her in that way of just speaking the truth boldly, like that quote that we just said about the Eucharist. She also said something along the lines of, a lot of people think religion is an electric blanket when, of course, it is the cross.
Mm.
She had a handle of the cross, but also the joy of life. She did not complain, even though she was heading towards her death. I find that very inspiring and grace-filled.
Yeah. Finally, how do three people write a book? What's the format, and how did y'all have different chapters, or what? How did y'all share the writing?
We were at the end of our journey in a monastery, in a Trappist monastery, during grand silence when we got the giggles and started thinking about, do we want to take all of our thoughts? Because we were bloggers at the time, and every night we would, you know, gather our thoughts and share them. We wondered, maybe this is something we can share with others. And so it took 11 years to get to the point of publication. But in that time, we let things simmer, and we really let the trip inform us, and we melded it into our life even more. So it went from being just a travelogue to a travel memoir. And we, again, mentioned earlier, we had each, were represented by a bird. I'm the cardinal. I'm the red cardinal in the book. And so that's where you'll find my voice. And then we just kind of each took a portion of each chapter that we decided together we wanted to share about, and we would each write separately and share our writings. And it was quite a process, but very meaningful too. And we each come from different generations. We have a millennial, and we have, I'm a Gen X, and then our older counterpart is a boomer. So we have three different perspectives.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, Roxanne, we're out of time. Thank you so much. I want to recommend this book to everybody, Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left all of us. Really appreciate your time, Roxanne. I'm very intrigued, and I'm excited to read the book myself. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you for yours as well, David. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you. This is the Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network, and thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's KATH 910 AM Interview of the Week. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of... Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
Cognitively aware of our prayers, because the